We are the Cat's Whiskers, and this is My Top Line. Hello and welcome to another edition of My Top Line. My name is Jonathan Bullard and I'm delighted to say our guest for this latest edition has a very successful blog and weekly periscope for Banners on the Wall. It is Anthony Russell.
Hello, Jono. Thank you for inviting me on. So I feel like the outsider. I'm the first non-elite league person on the show.
Yeah,
absolutely. From down in the ditches of the National Ice Hockey League, where I spend my time now.
Well, it's a mixture of elite league and National League, I think we've got from your team, just from your many years of supporting the Basingstoke Bison. So when did you take in your first game?
So my first Basingstoke Bison game, which is later than my first hockey game, because for people who know me, my hockey story starts in Germany in 2004. But my Bison watching day started in 2005. Having lived in Germany, having gotten into ice hockey there, I came back and it was like, right, I need to watch some hockey now. Where do I go? And because I didn't realise foolishly that Gosport is closer to Southampton than Basingstoke, I went on a bus to a train to a bus because I didn't drive at the time. My first ever game, I can't remember the exact date, but it was sometime in November 2005, and it was the Basingstoke Bison against the Newcastle Vipers. So we're talking the Vipers just before the London Racers fold. So no Cornish. Andre Pyatt was playing for the Vipers. And you think about that old school Vipers side, Paul Ferrone, David Longstaff. But it was Mark Bernard coached. It was that 05-06 season where Basingstoke went through about three or four goalies until Bernie gave up and just put himself back in net, having not played for 4 years. I foolishly sat in Block F, and I know in Basingstoke, which is right in the back corner by the wall where Frankie and Benny's is. And I was like, this is really good. And I virtually, over the years, I sort of moved closer and closer to the middle. I've been sat in my season ticket, sat now behind the bench for the better part of, I think it must be over a decade now. I think it's like 11 years now I've been in my season ticket seat. So it's I always joke about the fact that I'm an equal Rostock Piranhas and Basingstoke Bison fan. Rostock was the choice of the heart because I kind of tripped over and fell into hockey like that, but Basingstoke was the choice of the head because it's like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to stick with this, and I've stuck with it. And I'm sorry to the people of North Hampshire, but you are stuck with me now. You're not getting rid of me. So it's like a 40-minute drive each way to the rink every week, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
And of course, this has led on to you doing Banners on the Wall, the Basingstoke blog. You're writing, you're doing your periscopes each week. So how
lovingly
did that come about?
You, of course.
Sorry,
lovingly ripped off from you, of course.
Wow. It's a sincere form of flattery, that's all.
yes. I have better hair than you, though, so it's not quite imitation. No, the Banners on the Wall came... I've been writing most of my life, in one form or another. I come from a... I never say I'm English or anything else. I say I'm British because I am part English, part Welsh, and part Irish. And the English side of me has given me a very much kind of this element of pragmatism and diplomacy, and the Celtic side of me has given me a very, very long creative streak. My great uncle, God rest his soul, wrote a lot of poetry in his days when he was a missionary in Papua New Guinea back in the 50s. And I appear to be the only member of the family who's kind of taken that on in terms of the poetry, which I still write fairly regularly. But there was a period where I'd been going to the Bison for a while, and much like Laura from Fife, I was doing kind of like my own Twitter updates of Bison games, and I was just oozing sarcasm out of everything, which, as Jonna will tell you, is not uncommon for me. But the club, after a while, was struggling to get someone to do their updates because they were asking the club photographer to do them during the game. And they realized this was a terrible idea. And Grant King, who was the club photographer for quite a long time, just goes, like, you're doing this anyway, do you want to just do it for the club? And I was like, yeah, fine. And I realized, of course, that would mean kind of a change of style. doing it for the team. And I was like, I don't really have an outlet for my hockey thoughts anymore, because I was using Twitter, and I still obviously use it a lot to talk about hockey, but I wanted an outlet to kind of do that. And Banners on the Wall essentially started off at the back of a tweet in the middle of March in 2011, like, if I wrote about hockey, would anybody read it? And I stuck it out there, and a few people were like, yeah. And that was essentially it. So it's the 24th of March 2011 was the start of Banners on the Wall. So we are 9 years deep in this nonsense. The blog has chopped and changed in terms of its format and what I've done with it, but you know, there are some things that have kind of stayed, you know, very much the same. You know, a degree of honesty in our writing. We support our team, but I'm fair in what I write. I don't blow smoke up anybody. I try to take what I do seriously, but not take myself too seriously into the bargain, I think is the big thing. And that's kind of waxed and waned a bit in terms of how I've done it. Or, you know, there's the BOTW podcast for a while, but post the birth of my son, my amount of time to do stuff kind of lessened. And that's actually where the idea of doing the Periscopes came in, the What's Current Stream, as I call it, because obviously you've done yours for a while. I know other people do bits and pieces. And like, with all due respect to some of the Elite League stuff, the Elite League is oversaturated with the amount of coverage it gets, in my opinion. There's nothing for the National League. And the National League is good quality hockey. It's entertaining. Is it of a high standard? No. But there's a lot there to get your teeth into. And I realize there's nobody doing this. And actually, a Periscope is an easier and more time effective thing to put together for me in a period of my life where I am relatively time poor in a lot of ways, dealing with a 2-year-old.
yeah, I feel your pain.
Yeah, so the What's Current Stream was kind of born out of that, and it's a really, really fun way of doing it. We've, you know, built up a kind of a community of people who kind of come regularly, and some people dip in and out, and some players and coaches kind of dip in and out as well of National League teams. So it's been, you know, it's been a great experience, and always looking to kind of tinker with what we do, you know, what I do, make things better, and just keep pressing on. You know, I've nearly done a decade of it, so I'm not really in the mood to kind of stop now. Actual hockey being played, depending.
Okay, well, we will move on to your team now, and we'll start off, as we always do, with the netminder. So, Anthony, who is the netminder you've chosen?
The man between the pipes for me is Dean Skins.
Dean Skins, 9 seasons with the Bison over several different spells. His first games were in the 2001-02 season. So, Anthony, why particularly have you chosen Dean Skins?
Interestingly, you know, because the format of this show, Jono, is that you pick the people who kind of, you know, mean the most to you. And Dean Skins is by far and away not the best netminder I've seen in a Bayesian State Bison uniform. But interestingly, on the days that mattered, Dean Skins possibly turned into the best netminder in the world for that brief moment of time when he needed to be. And there's just so many big moments in my time of watching the Bison that have involved Dean Skins. I have no idea how anybody at 5'6" decided to be a netminder, because it feels like a really, really odd choice. He must have ducked at 90% of the shots that came on him. But I think of those really big games for the Bison, and you know, people who will remember the Bison from the Elite League days will not massively remember Dean when he was in the Elite League roster, because he was our backup, and they won't. You know, he wasn't around for the brief glimmers of real high quality from the Bison. When you think of like the 07-08 Knockout Cup, but that 2013-2014 season where we finally won a trophy after 13 years of trying. And even in the game, the second leg of the EPL Cup final against Milton Keynes, where we win it, he drops a dump in from the blue line. The Milton Keynes defenseman, I can't remember who it is, I think it's like Lee Jameson, dumps it on net, and Dean Skins drops the puck into the net. Like, nothing ever came easy with Dean Skins, but there was moments of just sheer brilliance where everything just came together and he just needed to do stuff. I think about as well in that transition period where we came into the EPL and then kind of rose back up the standings. And I think of some of the keepers that came before him. And I don't think we could have done what we did that year without Dean Skins in net, because there are individual moments of frustration that were then blown away by just when you look at it and you look at the consistency from him. You then look at that sort of spell of trophies for the Bison. 2013-14 EPL Cup, 2014 playoffs. He goes away, comes back, and then we end up winning, you know, we win the NIHL treble in 2018, South won league champions, Southern playoffs. He then shuts out Telford in the national playoff final. You talk about like nostalgia goggles, like the rose tinted specs. And actually, yeah, if you look at his numbers at times, you know, Dean, very much a confidence goalie. If his head went down, it would stay down. And his numbers go up and down all over the show when you look at where he'd been. But you look back through the sort of the misty, teary-eyed wonder of nostalgia, and it just all came together at the right moment for him. And he's a Basingstoke boy as well. He's, you know, directly responsible for one of our current netminders, Dan Weller Evans, being a netminder as well, because he was Dan's neighbour when Dan was a kid. He's just, you know, a Basingstoke boy that kind of means a lot to the club and the people, and certainly the recent history of it.
I mean, when you look at that NIHL championship season in 17-18, in nearly 92% save percentage, that's good figures for any netminder.
Yeah, I mean, that South 1 season was problematic in some ways because there were some teams that were just not very competitive at all. Like Cardiff Fire didn't win a game. They only got 1 point through not losing that season. It was because the game was a ban. The game didn't take place because of bad weather, and it was granted as a nil-all draw. Invicta were very up and down that year, and the tight, you know, the league season.
You don't have
not
to tell me about National League teams who don't score a point in the season. So.
Yes. God bless the Nottingham Lions. I do love them. So the What's Current Stream's unofficial second team. So there were some games that season that arguably might have padded his stats a tiny bit, but there, you know, there were some very good teams in that league with us when we won the league that year. You've got Peterborough were there, Bracknell were there, Swindon were there, who at that, you know, our sort of level of hockey at the moment are sort of perennial achieving teams. And you think as well, the Bison won the league title on the last day of the season, because coming into the weekend, the final weekend, because of the stupid way fixtures were done, Peterborough were playing once and Bison were playing twice. And Peterborough effectively, if they beat Streatham by enough goals, we were going to win the league on goal difference. They end up only winning 6-4 because Streatham came back from 4-0 down to tie them at 4-4. Basingstoke beat Invicta 10-1 at home on the Saturday, and then go to Cardiff on the last day of the season. So the bottom place team against the team that needs to win the championship. And Dean lets in an early goal and then just goes, I'm not having this, and just shuts the door. It's like, no, I'm not making, you know, there's a joke in Basingstoke about the easy way, the hard way, and the Bison way. And we gave them the Bison way for 5 minutes, and then Skinsey just went, nah, no, not today. We're shutting the door and we're going to finish this off.
Okay, we'll leave Dean Skins there and move on to your first defenceman. So, Anthony, your first defenceman, if you please.
My first defenceman is Mark DeSantis.
Mark DeSantis had one season for the Bison in 2006-07 in the Elite League, his only foray outside of North America in his entire career. He played 60 games in all competitions, 13 goals and 37 assists for 50 points overall from defence. So, why Mark DeSantis?
Mark DeSantis might arguably be the best player I have ever seen in a Bison jersey. And it's strange to think about that, and when I think about some of the other guys that have played for us. But, and again, this might be purely my nostalgia goggles kicking in, but Mark DeSantis might, for me, was just arguably the most complete defensive player we have. I maintain that Mark DeSantis should have been an all-star in the Elite League in 2006-2007. I did not see a better defensive player that year. And I went to a lot of games that year. I think probably for me, the one reason he didn't end up becoming an all-star was because he got stuck on a defensive pairing with Duncan Dalmeo, who, again, lovely guy, turning circle of the arc royal. He'd have blessed Duncan. He would have bought down the numbers on Nicholas Lidstrom. My first memory actually of Mark DeSantis as well was because at the time Basingstoke kind of did a lot of preseason friendlies. They'd have a preseason friendly against one of the local EPL sides, and then his first preseason game, for some reason, I don't really know what happened, but Nicky Chin was playing for Slough at the time, and he just decided that he wanted a fight, so he fought DeSantis. Punch. Just Chin goes down to a knee. DeSantis picks him up, punches him again, and walks off. And we're just like, oh, this is going to be fun. It's the only fight he had all season. And he
did have a few penalty minutes, though, because 151 penalty minutes, so he was no stranger to the call.
No, he was definitely not. And the Doug Shepherd hockey, because Doug Shepherd was the coach that year in Basingstoke, and Shep's style of hockey is very much high tempo, high aggression, less so people charging around trying to, you know, punch everybody lots and lots. There was no out and out enforcer in that roster, despite the fact Brad Cruikshank was on it given the year before, but that's for another time. But DeSantis for me was just this. He was just such a superb defenseman. You know, those sort of effort, and you know, you'll have had those guys in Nottingham. Anyone listening to this will know that sort of guy who just made their stay at home defenseman job just look effortless. Like nothing was a problem for them. He'd take one stride for like six of every other player on the ice. He, you know, the puck would come back to him, and he would just, if he was meant to shoot, he'd just pummel the thing, and you'd be surprised the puck wasn't in like five pieces. Aside from that as well, he was a really nice guy, really classy guy. And you think, and you look at where he went afterwards in terms of his coaching career, and he did, you know, he's done some bits and pieces. Elite Prospects doesn't have all the stuff that he did. It doesn't mention any, you know, the fact that he was, you know, the first coach of the Brampton Beast in the ECHL, and like in the middle of like building a roster and being a GM as well as being coach. Like the fact, you know, I dropped a message because I was like looking at old Bison players to interview, and I dropped one sort of saying, you know, I know things are really busy right now. Be lovely to interview at some stage. Get back to me when you can. I got a message back like an hour later, just going, it's totally cool. Anything for anybody based in Stoke, I'll make some time for you. Can you do this? And it's just, but that was kind of archetypical of the guy he was. Had tons of time for the fans. Not the most like naturally gifted person socially, probably. But you know, just the most, you think of like blue collar, put on your hard hat, go to work, almost stereotypical style, like old school stay at home D-man. And DeSantis was that. It was just so, such a joy to watch. There was a game against Manchester as well. It's the only time I've ever found it acceptable for anybody to yell shoot on the power play, because we're on the power play in overtime against Manchester, and everything kind of went into slow motion. I think like the bench must have shouted it, and everybody in the stands bar the away block, where it just comes back and you see him look up and he's in stride and everyone's just gone, shoot, and he's just absolutely slapped it top shelf, top corner in overtime. And it's just like, it was like something out of a movie to watch him do that. And it's a completely inconsequential regular season game against Manchester, but it was like oh, that's just beautiful. Just like one of those moments, like lovely moments of hockey where you're just like, yay, hook it to my veins forever.
Well, that doesn't make your favourite goal, but we will come on to that later. No. But we will move on to your favourite game now. So which is your favourite game in all the time you've been watching Basingstoke?
So my favourite game from my time watching the Basingstoke Bison comes from Sunday the 13th of March 2016 from the English Premier Ice Hockey League. Basingstoke Bison 5, Swindon Wildcats 4.
And that was the game that saw the Bison win the English Premier League title. So it will sound pretty obvious why you've chosen this, but tell it in your own words.
For me, it is one of the best games of hockey I've ever seen in terms of the overall package. Let's put this into context as well. That Swindon team had Stevie Lyle in net, not exactly a slouch when it comes to net minding. And in terms of like a performance from an opposition player, Jonas Hurg, who is a cult fan favourite with Wildcats fans, scored a superb hat trick, just like an out of this world performance. He literally just decided, right, if I have to do this all on my own, I'm going to do everything on my own. They are not having this party today. And he scores three absolutely superb goals. And it just wasn't enough either. The goals in that game as well. And there's one that makes me chuckle more than others, because there's some absolute talent on that Bison roster that year. John Baston, Thomas Hiedlowski, Rene Yarolin, Thomas Karpov, Joe Greener, Kieran Long, just like really, really quality names. And one of the goals in this massive game comes from Alan Lack, who a lot of your Elite League listening fans will have never heard of. Alan Lack was just King Rat, arguably the best agitator I have ever seen in any division of hockey I've watched. And he was on a line with Thomas Karpov effectively to just make some space. And it's this really, it was just archetypical of the roster that season, where Karpov does an immense, you know, great amount of skill to get around the man, feeds Lack, Lyle is down, pad is out, and Lack's first shot just goes straight into his pad, and you're like, no. And Lack, because that roster that year just never gave up on a puck. Nothing ever went down without a fight. And the puck comes straight back onto Lack's stick, and he just realizes in that split second moment, I've made an error here, and puts it up. And it's just this lovely sort of goal of a you know, all of these star high quality names we had on our roster that year, and it's the work, one of our workhorses who just did the what needed to be done. Also, bear in mind as well, Thomas Karpov scores two beautiful goals in that game, and Kieran Long scores two beautiful goals in that game as well. And Bison are 5-3 up with about a minute to go, and Swindon pull their netminder, and of course they score. Of course they score when you're 5-3 up and you're a minute away from winning the league title. Of course you let a goal in, because that's what happens in those kind of games. So there was that realization where, like, this is a thing, this is actually going to happen now. Bison had not won a league title. The last league title in Bison State was the Beavers in 1993 at that point. And everyone, you know, a friend of mine said to me, like, we don't talk about it. Don't mention it. It's not happening. And as the game went on, she kept looking around at me, she's going, it's not happening. And it got to about like 2 minutes to the end. And I said, I literally shouted at her, we have to accept that this is a thing that is happening. Because we were all just in such disbelief it was going to happen. Then Adam Harding scores, and we've all just gone, oh, no, 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 no. And then eventually Swindon tried to press. Aaron Connolly and Joe Greener just kind of forced the puck down the ice and just fought. Like, it's the hardest forecheck you've ever seen in your life, as both of them just put their heads down. And, you know, they've been skating hard for the duration of the game, and it's just like every ounce of energy they have left just goes on to racing down into the opposition zone to just like not give them a chance. And then it's just that massive release at the end of, oh my god, we've actually done it here in Basingstoke, this ridiculous, unfashionable North Hampshire town that's famous for being dull and having roundabouts. Like, we've done it, we've actually done it. And to do it in this game that's just such a good game as well. It's not like this horrible nervy thing. Like, playoff finals are amazing and the atmosphere is always brilliant, but playoff finals are always really tense and really nervy, I find. Like, the hockey isn't great. This game is just a really, really good game of hockey. I would put it up against any game that's been played in Britain in terms of the entertainment factor in the last decade.
Great story, and obviously brought you a lot of pleasure.
Yes, I have it on DVD. My son will be watching it when he can sit still for long enough.
Okay, we'll leave that there and go on to your second defenceman. So who is defenceman number two?
My second defenceman is the man we call Mr. Basingstoke 2, Kurt Reynolds.
Kurt Reynolds signed from Bracknell in 2008, had 10 seasons with the Bison, and spent 4 seasons in the US as a junior. So a long-time Basingstoke Bison player. So is that the reason you chose him?
Former Bison junior, and yeah, a long-time Bison player. But make no mistake, Kurt Reynolds, certainly at our level, was very, very good. You look at his first season as well, and his first season for us was that the 2008-2009 Elite League season, otherwise known as We're Laughing Because Otherwise We'd Cry, where the Bison lost every game after Christmas. In the summer of 2007, the Bison are bought by a gentleman by the name of David Taylor, who was also the owner of Bracknell at the time. Unfortunately, David wasn't very good with budgets, allegedly, he says, for the sake of Jono's legal fees. And then he steps back, and the club were then taken over by a Swedish businessman by the name of Thomas Enestrom, who then ran the team into the next year, and then he mysteriously disappeared. We do not know what happened to Thomas, allegedly. And so Planet Ice took the team back over, but were just not able, but you know, to be able to, you know, we had tons of players start the year. Everybody virtually disappeared. So that 2008-2009 team was literally the Raggy Dolls of hockey clubs. And Kurt comes in amongst that. And that, you know, it's his first full Elite League year. He had 2 games for the Panthers the year before that. And I was really surprised to see him in Basingstoke, to be perfectly honest. I thought he would have stuck around at Nottingham. Jokes that I make about the Elite League and the development of players aside, Nottingham's always taken a chance from time to time on a decent young Brit. Kurt Reynolds was a decent young Brit. And so when he came to Basingstoke, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. I can, you know, this is pretty decent. Yeah, that year was just horrendous. A year so bad, Corey Leclerc played 20 minutes as a forward for us. So that Elite League season was a bit of a misnomer because nobody came out of that year in terms of their stats looking particularly brilliant. And lots of people very fondly remembered from Basingstoke from that year. People like Kevin Reiter, who's probably the best netminder I've ever seen in Basingstoke. People like Jeremy Cornish, Eric Braff, put everything in. Ivo Mocek, guys who turned up every week and put in a shift despite the fact we were getting humped. But Kurt then sticks around when we drop to the EPL. And you saw what Kurt Reynolds was capable of. And again, like DeSantis, not tons of points. And actually, unlike DeSantis, not tons of penalty minutes either for Kurt. Kurt Reynolds very quickly became the number one defenseman. And arguably for a period at the second tier of British hockey, he was the number one defenseman in the country. You know, there are other guys you put in the discussion and you can argue the toss a little bit either way. You know, one of them will be very, very familiar to you in Nottingham. And he arguably still is at the second tier, one of the best defensemen in the country in Tom Norton. But there was a period where you could make a very, very strong case to Kurt Reynolds was the best defenseman outside of the Elite League in Britain. And he was just, he stuck around, just kept coming back, turned up, did his job, kept coming back. And he was just, you know, a local lad, stuck around, made a hockey career in the town, made a business in the town, and just, you know, put everything into it. Never needed a letter on his jersey. Never really needed to be, people said, oh, we should make Reynolds captain. And I always said, doesn't need it. Doesn't need to be captain. Kurt Reynolds leads by being Kurt Reynolds. You just leave him to do his job and he'll be absolutely fine. And that's exactly what they did. You know, never captained the side, never needed to. Just turned up, positionally brilliant. Had the hands, absolutely fine. Could shoot if he needed to. Could make an outlet pass as good as anybody. And was just really, really great to see. A lot of people talk about like Tony Redmond being Mr. Basingstoke. I caught the tail end of Tony's career, so I never saw Tony Redmond in full flight. I saw Kurt Reynolds in full flight, and he was superb. No, you know, former BOTW Player of the Year, multiple trophies with us, multiple All-Star appearances as well. Just I venture if you asked any other Bison fan who'd been around even shorter than me, I don't think anybody would argue about Kurt being in. You know, a lot of people would pick Kurt Reynolds for this.
And a pretty glowing assessment of Kurt Reynolds there from yourself, and he makes defenceman number two in your team. Before we go on to the forwards, we're going to choose the player from another team who you would have loved to play for the Bison but never did. So, who is that?
I was chuckling when I was writing about this because a couple of years ago, if you'd asked me this question, I probably would have said Ashley Tate or Russ Cowley, and then we actually had both of them play for us, which is really weird. But the player I've chosen as my player from another team is Neil Martin.
Neil Martin, two spells in Britain in the Ice Hockey Super League with the London Knights, where he won a playoff title, and then more famously probably with the Coventry Blaze, where he won three Elite League titles, two Challenge Cups, and a playoff with the Blaze. So why particularly Neil Martin? Out of all the players you've seen, why him?
Could do a bit of everything. Just the consummate professional hockey player, I think. For me, in the Elite League era, and I know this will not go down very well with Nottingham fans, I don't think I can name a better defenceman in the Elite League era in this country. You know, I'm sure names will be chucked over, and Nottingham fans can very, very rightly make an argument about Corey Nielsen, but he's not for me. For me, Neil Martin is just, if you needed him to do something, he would be able to do it. I venture if they needed Neil Martin to play in goal, he probably would have made 30, 40 saves, because just such a good defensive player, could do that a bit of attack when he kind of needed to. But also as well, just one of those players as an opposition fan, just frustratingly good. You'd watch him, and you'd watch your team play against him, and your forward would be going up the wing, and then Martin would just dispossess me, like he didn't even need to try, and you'd just be like, oh, we're on the attack. Oh, no, we're not. And it would just feel like that forever and ever. You just want him off the ice. Mostly if you're watching commentary, it's like, oh, look, it's James Pease. Hooray. I just, for me, Neil Martin is just one of those players that I could only dream of having had in a Bison jersey, because as well, I think about some of the rosters that we had, and not to kind of like sort of say, oh, if we'd not had this person, because like anybody who put on a Bison jersey that I've seen, very, you know, very, very few players have ever, I felt, not been worthy to wear the shirt. But I wonder what we could have been with a player that good in our jersey. If we'd had a Neil Martin, Mark DeSantis D pairing in the Elite League, what could we have done? Admittedly, they'd have had to play 40 minutes a night, but it would have been a lot of fun to watch.
I think it's a fair enough point you say about he has a case for being the best defenseman in the Elite League. I think if you spoke to a lot of Blaze fans who were around at that time and you asked them to name a player who was central to all their success, I think the vast majority of them would choose Neil Martin.
Yeah, you'd have the conversation about Dan Carlson, Adam Calder, God rest him, and Neil as well. And you think about the other pieces that kind of like rotated in and out of that Blaze lineup. But there, you know, there were some guys that were really, really pivotal to that Blaze team being so successful. And I think, you know, even when Neil slowed down, as all hockey players do, the older they get, it's that factor of adaptation. I think like my example for this is people like Sergei Fedorov, this like blazing forward who then massively transitions to just being this awesome quality defenseman as well in his later years in the NHL. Like Neil Martin knew that he wasn't going to be the fastest forever, he wasn't going to be the sharpest forever, so he was able to adapt his game as he went. Really, the quality players can do that. And that's why, I say, I'd have taken Neil Martin at like 35, 36, because he still would have been, the amount he could have done in Basingstoke, I think would have been massive.
Let's head on to your forwards now. So, forward number one.
Forward number one is Brad Cruickshank.
Brad Cruickshank, 4 seasons with the Bison in the Elite League, 2 of those as captain, 182 games in all competitions, 71 goals and 77 assists, and over 800 penalty minutes in a Bison jersey. So why Brad Cruickshank?
Interestingly, I'm not going to put Brad Cruickshank in because he was a fighter. Brad Cruickshank's first season in Britain was my first season of Bison hockey. And when you're new to hockey, fighting is a really visceral thing. It still is for quite a lot of people. My attitudes on fighting have kind of waxed and waned over the years. And you love your enforcers because that's, you know, they're doing a role for the team. And it's a tough role. It's a really, really tough role. Hey, go out and like bare knuckle box a guy as you're skating on like knife edges. Okay. So there's always that, even if you're not a big fan of fighting, there's always that respect, I think, for the guy for doing the job for your team. But the thing with Brad was you look at then the 06-07 season, say his second year, and that's the start of Brad turning up and deciding, I want to play. I'm not going to just turn up and punch people. I'm going to turn up and I'm going to play. And it worked. It really, really worked. Brad's from a working class town in Alberta, like a lot of Alberta, you know, it's a lot of blue collar, hard hat jobs. For the fact there's a lot of service industries in Basingstoke, Basingstoke is quite a working class town. And very few guys have kind of turned, you know, guys have turned up in Basingstoke and, you know, they've been nice and they've been polite and they've been good with the fans. But Brad Cruickshank bought into the town, if you see what I mean. Like, he just got the people and the people got him. And that 06-07 season, where the what was kind of like known across the league as the Bison line, so it's Greg Owen in the center, Greg Chambers on the wing, and Brad Cruickshank on the other wing, and you've got Owen, who's the archetypical center, and Chambers, who's the sniper. But none of it works without Brad. So you've got Brad, who everybody loves because he's just, you know, he's just ingratiated himself massively. But then the guy who was effectively just there to punch people just turns into a player. And I'm not talking about, like, you think of like that Carlson Calder line we were talking about. Like, they had Andre Pyatt on their line. And Pyatt was there to, you know, create space and cause a bit of mayhem. And effectively, that's what Brad was there to do for that line. But then Brad starts scoring. And then Brad starts setting the other guys up. And then the points get more and the points get more. And it's like, oh my God, Brad Cruickshank really, really plays hockey. And that line on its day was just, it was unstoppable. Like, particularly at home. Like, obviously, it's a different kettle of fish when you're playing at home. But there were home games where I wouldn't have wanted to have been a defenseman trying to deal with that line. Because when they were on and everything was clicking, untouchable. Absolutely untouchable. A line so good, Coventry, a couple of years later after we leave the EPL, brings that line back together and they win a title with it. That's the impact of dealing with that bit of chemistry in it. But that's also what Brad Cruickshank brings to teams. It's why, you know, obviously the circumstances, you know, not being able to be paid, Brad goes to Sheffield. But Sheffield don't sign Brad Cruickshank. You know, he does have fights for the Steelers, but you don't sign Brad Cruickshank. Wasn't going to be signed if he was still playing like 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes a night and basically just punching people in the face. They signed Brad Cruickshank because Brad Cruickshank could play. It's a great story of a guy in a place, in the right place at the right time, in the right situation, that just brought something out of him, and he just stepped into being our leader on the ice, a big leader off the ice and just being part of what it means to be part of the Basingstoke Bison. There are people now. There is a young lady I now know who is at university, and her first season was Brad Cruikshank's first season, and the impact of him, you know, still her favourite player today because of what he meant. You know, someone who sat through us being terrible and then being very, very good. And Shanker is still her favourite player. Absolute grade one quality human being with it as well.
Great stuff. We'll move on to your favourite goal now. Anthony, your favourite goal.
My favourite goal for the Basingstoke Bison was scored by Nicky Chin in the 2014 EPIHL playoff semi-final against the Guildford Flames.
So this was a goal that made it 3-1 to the Bison in the second period. Why particularly this goal out of all the ones that you've seen?
I'll be really honest, Jono, and I will lay this on the line. I hate the Guildford Flames. I don't like them. It's like the Guildford Flames and the Bracknell Bees are just two teams we don't like. It's okay, folks. I don't really, really like hate them. They're just a team I don't like. I don't like Guildford. Nobody likes Guildford. So to have them in the playoff semi-final was a big thing anyway. Guildford had a bit of a reputation as being playoff chokers, but it was the Bison. And we'd been at the playoffs the year before and had lost in the semi-final. And so it was our second playoff weekend in umpteen years. And end of the first period, Bison are up 2-1. And the second starts, and we're under the cosh a bit. We're on the back foot. Guildford are starting to wrestle the game from us. And it was going to take something. It needed a moment to just really, you know, pull things back our way. You know, whatever it is, whether it's a hit or a pass or whatever it was, something needed to happen to put the Bison back in charge of this game. And earlier in the day, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head who Manchester played in the first semi-final. It might have been Swindon. And Michael Cerny for Manchester scored just what was a really, really good goal. Puck in neutral zone, danced around a couple of guys and just in and scored. And looked really, really nice. And in that moment, it was just something. And Nicky Chin, oldest player on the team, captain of the team. And, you know, Guildford in the EPL at the time, I know they've got a very different star roster now, but they were the old men of the EPL. Tons and tons of old guys, not many kids, didn't give many chances to younger players. And Chinny just looks up, gets the puck, and he just goes, oh, off I go. And Chinny just rolled back the years. Like, I didn't get to see Nicky Chin in the Super League, and I didn't get to see Nicky Chin in the BNL or anything like that. I've obviously gone back and watched it later. But Chinny just turned into Wayne Gretzky for like 10 seconds, and he's just round one, round another, and he beats the goalie five hole. And I got the wrong goalie earlier. I told you it was Mark Lee when I was chatting to you earlier. It was actually Greg Rockman, and he just beats Rockman five hole. And it's my favorite goal for a couple of reasons. One, because it's a big goal, a very, very well taken goal, and just a superb bit of skill in a crucial moment. But the other thing as well is that it just broke the opposition. That much better because it was Guildford, but they were beaten then. That moment where Nicky just puts the puck between the pads and into the back of the net, and it's literally just like they're done. We are like 27 minutes into this game. It's only 3-1, but they are done. They are not coming back from this. We have put our foot on their throat. We have snapped their neck. They are done. This is it. And they were just beaten mentally. Guildford were beaten mentally after that. It was then followed up by the really bizarre side. You could tell how much we'd beaten them because our big Slovakian defenseman, Miroslav Van Trober, a man with like 100-mile-an-hour slap shot, decided to take the pass. And instead of shooting like everybody was expecting him to do, then toe-dragged and then backhand beat Rockman over his glove. Because he just stepped off the blue line, went round a man, went, well, I've done you, up I go. Because that's the sort of confidence we had. Our big point shot defenseman's like, I don't need to take a big point shot. I can take the piss and skate round you and make you look like an idiot and beat your goalie because I can now because you guys are not doing a damn thing. And that's why it's so good because it's the moment itself is brilliant because it's just such a good goal, but it's also what it meant with it. It's like the team that we arguably dislike the most is just blown away in a couple of seconds worth of just sheer magic from one of the great characters of British hockey.
And that's what it's all about. It's not necessarily the best goals. It's those that mean something to you.
Oh, yeah. Very, very much so. And there's tons of goals that obviously look, certainly like in the last sort of 7 or 8 years of Basingstoke hockey that have kind of meant something. And, you know, this was a hard choice. But when I looked, I was flicking through some bits and pieces. And when the photograph came came up on my social media feed. I know Grant King has been like our old photographer has been putting up sort of shots. And when I was thinking about bits and pieces for this, that came up, and I just went, yeah, has to be that, because like in just with the benefit and beauty of hindsight, it's just it's so good. It's just really, really good as well. And just the archetypical sort of Chinny celebration of just knowing that he's just like ruined it for them as well. Just big grin, as wide as the Severn Bridge, arms in the air, and just like, it's beautiful, even to this day. Might have to get it out and watch it again after this.
Well, let's wait a while yet, because we've still got a bit to go in this. So forward number two in your team. So who is that?
Forward number two is Aaron Connolly.
Aaron Connolly, 5 seasons with the Bison between 2013-14 and 2017-18, winning 2 EPL titles, a playoff title, and an NIHL 1 South title. So why Aaron Connolly?
If I say to you Danny Myers, what do you think of, Jono?
Big favourite of mine.
Yeah. You think of those players, you know, I think of guys that have been like the heartbeat, the engine of their team. Would go in goal if you asked them to, would probably even cut the ice if you asked them to. And Aaron Connolly was our engine. He was our heartbeat. He was a man just so mature beyond his years. Like, if you need Aaron Connolly to go out and be on a grind line for you, grind better than anybody else. If you needed him to score, he'd score for you. He scored some really big goals for us as well. The second leg of the EPL Cup final in 2014, scores 20 seconds into the game, massive. The 2018 national playoff semi-final against Sheffield, scored a hat-trick. It's got a lot of big goals all over the place, one of which were possibly coming up later. He says epically foreshadowing. Like when he came to, he'd been at Slough before he came to Basingstoke, and he was eventually kind of, he apparently was meant to come 1 year earlier, but because he'd already committed to Slough, he didn't want to back out of playing for Slough, because he said, I've given my word that I'm going there, so I'm going there. And having played that year, then he came to Basingstoke to play with Doug, having played with him before. You immediately noticed it right from the get-go, just what sort, you know, like this lad's got something about him. The first year he was there, Joe Miller was one of our alternate captains. And this was in the midst of the Wayne Scholes red hockey takeover of Telford. And Joe Miller gets offered a bucket load of money to go back to Telford. And no Bison fan blamed Joe in the slightest. And there was this conversation amongst us like, oh, who gets the A then? And a couple of us hazarded guesses, and people sort of saying to me, oh, it's going to be Kurt Reynolds. Like, it won't be Kurt. I reckon it's going to be Aaron. And it was Aaron. And a lot of people were shocked by it. But immediately paid dividends, just made perfect sense as soon as you saw him on the bench, vocal, picking the guys up when they, you know, when things had gone wrong, not being in the ref's ear too much, but being there to poke and prod when he needed to. And then just with it, a really, really good hockey player into the bargain with us, and just there for so many of our big moments. And then after Nicky retires, becomes our captain as well, and just fitted him like a glove. He was only like 22 when he became our captain. Didn't faze him, made no difference to him at all. Just went to work every day like it made nothing to him. It's a massive loss, the fact he's gone and the fact he's at Romford now. But that's the nature of hockey at an IHL level. Guys have jobs and they have lives. And Aaron's now closer to sort of where he lives and what he does. And it's absolutely no shock that when he turned up in Romford, instantly made captain. Like, everybody was like, yeah, of course you make Aaron Connolly your captain as soon as you get him. Why wouldn't you? It's like the most logical choice. And Sean Easton's a good coach anyway, but it's just, you know, he didn't have a hard decision, I think, in terms of making that one. We miss him in terms of the things that he brought to us, but he will forever, you know, Aaron Connolly's got a long time left in this game and will be around British hockey for a very long time, but he will always be fondly remembered in Basingstoke because of just being like one of those salt of the earth, heartbeat of the roster guys. His legacy will last a long time in Hampshire, rightly so.
So we move on now to your final forward and the final player in your line. So, Anthony, please reveal.
The final player for me, Jono, is Thomas Karpov.
Thomas Karpov, Czech import, who played 5 seasons with the Bison, also between 2013-14 and 2017-18. 268 games in all competitions, with 164 goals, 183 assists for 347 points overall. So a big, big point scorer for the Bison. But is that why you chose him?
Partly. I'm not going to lie, the amount of points he scored for us is definitely a big boon. Certainly the big thing with Thomas, and I've gotten to know Thomas a bit away from hockey, and like, the dude is just so intelligent. Like, he's not playing hockey anymore. He's like the managing director of a company in the Czech Republic that like rents out bikes to people. There's an interesting conversation I had with him once where, if you look at where he played in his early career compared to where he played later on, the intelligence was always there. And I think one thing he said to me was that he had a tendency to overthink things. And it meant that he sometimes didn't apply himself as he should have done. Because, like, this guy played Western Hockey League. He played representative level hockey for the Czech Republic. He played for Sparta Prague. He played for Sparta Prague in the Spengler Cup. Like, this guy played in some really, really big places. And it just didn't seem to come together for him, which is a bit of a shame. But a chunk of that, he admitted, was kind of on himself. And he eventually got to that point where he leaves Britain and goes to Telford. And that Telford roster that year was not very good. Cops, when he eventually went over there, scored at a pretty decent lick. I think it was like, if you look at his stats, John, it was like a point per game for Telford, something like that.
Yeah, 38 and 23. So it was pretty decent return.
Yeah. And so the end of that season comes, and Thomas and a Cardiff junior who was up in Telford at the time, a young guy who's not playing much anymore, called Tim Burrows. Both him and Tom sign for Basingstoke. And it was like, oh, okay, this is pretty decent. But, you know, a few people were like, oh, you know, we signed an import off the bottom place team, but he scored lots of points. You know, we'll see how he does for us. Maybe he'll be secondary scoring. And that first season, he blew everybody away. And it was just like, you know, so many goals, just points out of his eyes. And I remember very vividly the fact that after that first season, everybody was like, and of course, like with our big imports, everyone's like, we've got to get Karpov back. And the Bison used their last bit of leverage on their university deal they had with the University of Winchester. And the game is like the end of the, whatever it was, like the season ticket night. It wasn't the end of season awards. It was after that. There's generally like events in the summer in Basingstoke. We all get together. We all have a chat. You know, the club come out. And it's like, oh, you know, we've signed this person. Surprise. And like, oh, this is what we're doing about the shirts and this, that, and the other. And they played a video where they announced, actually, no, it wasn't that one. It was Doug Shepherd announced that Karpov had signed for 3 years. And I have never heard the bar that loud that quickly. Like, it was the reaction to the fact that Karpov was going to be around for three seasons was insane. And it was literally just, and I remember having a chat with John Neville about the guy from Planet Ice, who's kind of in charge of the Bison, the big boss of the Bison, as it were. And I was just like, you got him on a uni deal, didn't you? And he just looked at me and smiled and walked off. We got a guy who arguably, in my opinion, was good enough for the Elite League in his prime. For 5 years, 1 year off of the uni deal. He then did his bachelor's in Winchester. He did his master's in Winchester as well. And just so many big goals, so many big moments. Scored an absolute hammer of a goal in the 2014 playoff final against Manchester. Just hits the blue line, sees Stephen Fone is standing up and he's like, bye, bang. That game to win the EPL in 2016 against Swindon. There's the sort of thing about just how smart a player he was, you know, just the skill and the hockey smarts he has. He scores two goals. The second one, he scores on the power play through a screen. There's two defensemen just in front of Lyle, and he picks the top corner out, and Stevie doesn't see it go past him. But his first goal is the one that really, really does it for you. And you can find the highlights of this game on YouTube, because Karpov wins the battle in the boards in the corner and steps out, and he looks up, and there's Kieran Long streaking in towards him from neutral ice into the high slot. Defenseman looks towards Long. Other defenseman looks towards Long. And Lyle must take no more than half a step. Karpov's coming out of the corner. He has not looked at the defenseman. He's looking straight at Lyle, sees that half step off of his post, and immediately snaps it back and under his arm. 99 out of 100 other players with arguably your best natural goal scorer streaking into the high slot like that, the puck is going to one place only, and that is onto his stick. Karpov didn't need to do that because he was waiting for the keeper to make that mistake and just went, no, bye. And it's just, that's the sort of thing that Thomas Karpov brought to you, was not only just lots of goals, just how smart a hockey player he was, because it was just those little touches that you need from a guy. And again, a guy who, you know, he was an alternate captain for us as well. Arguably never really needed a letter, but he led by just like putting the team on his back at times and just like, we need a goal. All right, I'll score it. One of the runners up for my favourite goal was a game on New Year's Day against Guildford in the Spectrum, where Karpov scores in overtime. And like, we won very rarely in Guildford at all when we played them in the EPL. But Karpov scores in overtime and then skates towards the Bison block and like gives like the old Hulk Hogan, like, I can't hear you thing with his hand to his ear. And that's still on the side of of the Olympia in Basingstoke, that image, because it will never die. We ignore the fact that he initially was signed for Bracknell because Doug Shepherd went there, but he never actually played for Bracknell. He pulled out beforehand, so it's fine. We ignore that. That never happened. We completely retcon that to Kingdom Come. But like, it's just a superb human being, a lovely bloke, and just a phenomenally talented hockey player. He would not have been out of place in any elite league roster.
Okay, well, Thomas Karpov completes your line, which is netminder Dean Skins, in defence Mark DeSantis and Kurt Reynolds, and then your forwards Brad Cruikshank, Aaron Connolly and Thomas Karpov. Happy with those choices?
Oh, very much so. This was, like a lot of people, this was very, very hard to kind of whittle some people down, Jono. My honourable mentions list was originally about 10 people long, and I whittled it down for you because I didn't think your listeners would be that interested. But
it's
almost like I presented shows before. But yeah, no, very, very, very happy with my line. I think, you know, there's a couple of people that there were moments where I traded people in and out, but I eventually kind of picked my lot and stuck with it.
So who are your honourable mentions? You just said that you had it at around 10, but
I whittled it down to a couple. I whittled it down to four, which I'll be brief about all of them. Mm. Kevin Reiter, netminder, did play for Newcastle and Sheffield as well, but the best keeper I've ever seen play in Great Britain was the former holder of the Elite League saves record when he saved 65 of 66 in a game against Coventry in the Sky Dome that Basingstoke won 4-1. That he was there for us for that 2008-09 season when we lost all those games. We were horrendous, and we would have lost every game 30-0 if it wasn't for Kevin. He was superb. Now one of the netminding coaches for the USA National Development Program in Ann Arbor in Michigan. Lovely bloke, top bloke. Wish him all the success in the world. Tony Redman, Mr. Basingstoke himself, number 20, mostly for his goal against Belfast in 2005 that stopped Belfast winning the title in Basingstoke. Yes, Patrick Smith from A View from the Bridge. I did have to get that reference in because I always will do, because the trophy was in the building that night, Jono, and they didn't leave with it. They just walked it away. You could see them walking it behind the old DJ box at Basingstoke, back and away. Just beautiful. But Tony as well is just a club legend and fantastic. Greg Owen, former British international. Again, lovely human being. One of the best centermen I've ever seen play for us. And the last one I want to mention is Joe Rand, who was a Canadian import for us in the EPL. Consummate power forward, just absolutely superb at his job. Scored a penalty shot in the 2014 in the EPL player final against Manchester. A more humble, unassuming man you could never wish to meet. He was ridiculous, you know, just such a chill guy. But boy, could that man play. Just never scored more than a point per game, which was odd for an import in our level, but it was all the other things he did. That's why you had Joe Rand on your roster.
And if you could choose just one, who was the closest to getting on?
Was Kevin Reiter.
Kevin Reiter. Okay. All right, we'll finish the show as we always do with everybody with your favourite moment in all the time, the 15 years you've been watching the Basingstoke Bison. What is your favourite ever moment?
Yeah. So my favourite ever moment is actually paired right down to what could arguably be, you know, whether you count it as a second or a nanosecond, I don't know how you want to put this. But it is the puck hitting the net for the Bison's empty net goal in the 2014 EPIHL player final against the Manchester Phoenix. So the Bison are 4-3 up. They win the face-off in the zone. Manchester have pulled the netminder. And Aaron Connolly goes up the wing, round a sprawling frantic backlick who's trying just desperately to stop him scoring. And Aaron puts the puck into the goal. But it's the puck hitting the back of the net. Because what it meant was that the Basingstoke Bison were back as a club. The years of mediocrity in the Elite League gone. The owners who disappeared, leaving us in the mire, gone. Being a bit of a joke club, gone. Everything disappears in that moment. There's no EPL title in 2016. There is no treble in 2018 without us winning that player final. The cup was lovely and the cup was great because it ended the drought. But that moment where we were having finished second in the league to Manchester anyway, to then beat them in the playoff final in what was like, you know, like it's not a great game of hockey. It was a superb spectacle. I don't think there are, in terms of like playoff finals, again, I would put it up against any Elite League or any other EPL playoff final in terms of like a game to watch. But it goes in and we're back. It's not a, you know, people will make, will horror, you know, we're disparaging about the EPL, they were disparaging about the NIHL two division split in the North and South, and they're disparaging about the National League now. And they can all go hang, as far as I care. That moment was just this beautiful moment of realization that actually our club is standing again. Like, we had that horrible moment, you know, no money, and we rebuilt under Steve Moria, and it was always kind of on the way back up, but we never quite got there. And that is the moment where we stood up and just went, we are back. We are never going back into the doldrums again. Rage, rage against the dying of the light, however you want to put it. And it was the foundation for what came afterwards, where being mid-table, being mediocre was no longer acceptable in Basingstoke. We go out and we are putting rosters together to win championships. We're putting rosters together to play good, hard-hitting, hard-nosed, entertaining hockey every week. And it's just that, you know, the big bang moment per se. You can obviously like pair it back to go back to like Doug Shepherd being appointed coach and changing the roster, and yeah, there's lots of little things that build up to, but you're wanting to pick like that fulcrum moment, that nanosecond of where it all comes together to then push on and be something else. It's right there in that moment. It hits the net, Aaron Connolly jumps up and down like a mad person, and we were off and running again. And you think about 2018, where we didn't win the National Cup. We didn't do the Grand Slam. But that 2018 where we were, you know, with the Basingstoke Bison, you think 4 years on, we are, you know, won our league, won the Southern playoffs, win the national playoffs. And it's like we are the undisputed kings of the second tier in British hockey. There is no team outside of the Elite League that is as good as we are in that moment. But none of it happens without that goal. None of it happens without that puck hitting that net and us winning that playoff final. Beautiful.
Yeah, a beautiful description to end this edition of My Top Line. Anthony, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Johnny.
And thank you very much to you for listening. We'll be back again soon with another edition of My Top Line. But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.